Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is part two of the Drunk Cast, episode 245 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with Chris and Stu of Hardcore Listing and Stu of Off the Beaten Track podcast. We start to get considerably more drunk in this episode. It's episodes three and four that really get messy. Stu walks out midway through episode four at a really inappropriate time, actually. But you'll have to tune into that. At a heartbreaking time, he walks out. But yeah, we will get to that. I told you at the end of the last one, if you didn't tune in at the end, at patreon.com/scroobiouspip, after the fourth episode goes out, I'm going to be uploading a Drunkast Hangover episode. So the night after all of this mess, I woke up and the first thing I did was record a mini podcast, just kind of saying how I'm feeling, how I feel about the night that was, all this kind of thing. So that's going to be over at patreon.com/scroobiouspip. It's only a little thing, but it's only $1 a month. So what do you reckon? You could pledge before Christmas as a little nice gesture and then have that in the new year. Anyway, on with the podcast. This is episode two. I'll be back at the end. I don't know why. To tell you when episode three's out. Let's go with that. Ta-ta. Oh, sorry, the usual warnings. We are incredibly drunk and talking absolute nonsense, so don't get mad at us, boy. I've started rolling now because Stu almost dropped his can.
He almost set himself on fire
because he's just saying this does not taste like it's 7%. Welcome back to part two of the Drunk Cast, brought to you this week by Off the Beaten Track podcast.
Oh, thank you very much.
Stu's new podcast, and we've had two new podcasts on the network. In case I don't do an intro for this, yeah, Let's just start the music now, and then we can get into it. Are you taking a picture, Stu?
Yeah.
Here we go. Well, there we go. There's a weird bit of silence as well to start things up.
It helps Buddy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Makes it. Is he all right?
He's great, mate. He's very, very good. He's in Margate.
Oh, that bastard.
He's getting married.
Oh, I'm happy for him for that.
It's bloody lovely. Yeah. I've been up and visited him twice now, maybe three times. And Margate's beautiful and perfect for him and H. His missus is amazing. They're wonderful. He seems to be smashing it, producing stuff and doing all sorts. I always want to give him more and more shout-outs as a producer because he produces this podcast. He produces Fritz. Films to be buried with. He's the best in the business. I rate him hugely. You heard, Stu, on the episode I had MVP on where my mics hadn't worked for some reason, so we were just going off my backup mic in a calf. With building work going on in the calf, and he made it sound amazing. It's different. Wow. Obviously, there's a slight jump as soon as you're listening.
But literally within about a minute, you acclimatise to it and you realise that
it's not going to work.
Harry pulled that back.
Yeah,
it was amazing because it sounds fine.
Yeah, he's the best. Wow. He's the best in the business. So yeah, he's very good. But as said, he does the Films to be Buried With podcast, which has been a favourite of mine. This year he's had some amazing guests. His episode with David Earl, who plays Brian Gittins, is amazing because that's someone who really does not want to be on a podcast at all. He's so unhappy to be there. And you realise that the lack of confidence that the Gittins character has is the one part of the Gittins character that isn't a character.
Yeah.
It's literally, he's got no self-confidence, he's hilarious and wonderful and intelligent and great.
The Jade Adams episode was
Episode was great because she cried like three times.
Yep.
At one time just talking about Super Bob, which, as we know, is one of my favourite films of all time. I rave about it constantly. So, yeah, but Brett also did his first ever live of films to be buried with, and it was at the BFI, which is fancy.
Wow.
Big deal.
His guest was previous Distraction Pieces guest, Will Poulter, who's fantastic.
Turned up at We Are Lizards.
He came and partied at We Are Lizards
with us and below his mates.
Yeah, was I, don't think.
No, you missed that one, sadly. But it was one of the best. But yeah, it was great. And so yeah,
you're so chuffed about that, Stu.
You're so chuffed. You weren't there as really good as
which makes me think it wasn't, and that you was really sour that I wasn't there.
He was the only geezer there. Dead. Yeah. Turns out we got the wrong night. So yeah, it's the BFI. It's Will Poulter as the guest, who in Detroit is up for all sorts of awards. This real,
rightly so.
Amazing performance, just a wonderful
actor. He plays Detroit, doesn't he?
he plays D in Detroit. Yeah. Dennis Troit. So Brett was like, he was a bit nervous. He'd spoken to me about how the live ones will work, and I recommended preparing some kind of audience participation as well. As you've seen in my ones, it's all audience, but I'll normally come on and tell a story for five minutes or something to ease him in. And he decided he'd get people to submit their questions or their film choices to match his questions. Because Films We Buried With is kind of a Desert Island Discs for films.
Yeah.
Whereas Off the Beaten Track is a Desert Island Discs for people who can't get on Desert Island Discs.
Completely that. Completely that.
So, yes. So
Desert Island Indie Discs.
Exactly. So, he thought, right, I'll do that. And he got some advice off Lizzie, actually, at Acast on what hashtag he should use. And he thought Films To Be Buried With, which is FTBBW. So he did hashtag FTBBW, tweet me your things. And within an hour or
hold on, I've got to figure out what that is.
He had to change it because it's a dirty hashtag. And if you looked on the hashtag, there was a lot of very sexual pictures. And again, considering it's different when you're associated with the BFI on a thing. And have you looked at some of the pictures?
Yeah, I've got to have a look now.
So, so what FTBBW means, as well as Films To Be Buried With.
I've got to go to the toilet.
It's.
Hang on a minute.
It's. Can I tell you what it is?
Go on, I'm ready.
It's fat titted, big breasted women. So I wish he hadn't found it, so he just pulled it up on a screen or something at the BFI. I was like, let's check the hashtag. Fat titted, big breasted women, Films To Be Buried I was honestly in tears of laughter as I'm sitting in at home that morning checking the Films To Be Buried. Because all Brett said was, I've had to change the hashtag because there was an issue with it. And I was like,
there's an issue?
This is curious. I clicked on it. I was like, there's a bloody issue with it.
He's got to do a T-shirt.
Yes.
Oh, that's incredible.
imagine him just opening one and say, "Oh, surprising! No one chose the clumps as one of their film selections."
Oh, brilliant,
mate! It killed me.
Oh shit!
So yeah, he changed it to just something like Films To Be buried with, or probably buried films or something like that. But
oh man, that's killing me.
It taught.
That is so good.
And completely innocent as well. And I couldn't figure out what it meant. I know BBW is a thing that I'm familiar with as a hashtag.
Yeah.
As a favourite search of mine.
I was going to say, I think I'm familiar with. All too familiar with.
But yeah, I didn't know what the rest was. And it wasn't until we were in for a meeting at Acast that...
Yeah.
That Lizzie, I made you leave the room because I was like, I want to save this for the podcast. And she whispered, imagine that, we're in a professional meeting for a big deal meeting for a thing that you and me are doing. And Stu has to leave the room while a young lady whispers, fat titted, big breasted women in my ear. And I go, okay, thank you.
You may now ring into the room, Stuart.
Yes. What to go on to next? So I'll go to some audience questions, but are you two fans of Peep Show?
I love Peep Show.
Because I've never watched it that much, but I got my brother a gift this year.
Yeah.
Which I was excited about for ages. I bought it. When's your birthday?
April 21st.
So I bought it in February or April. And my brother's birthday's in October. So I was holding off for a long time.
And I gave it to him, and it was a wonderful moment. I'll tell you what it is in a minute. But he said, he's like, I've got to get a quote from Peep Show printed up to put on the bottom. And I couldn't get this quote out of my head for ages. A few days later, me, my mum, my brother, my dad's missus all went to some Russian opera. Some Russian classical music at 10 a.m. in London. And it's all old people, all quiet. And I was almost laughing out loud every time I thought of this quote. But it's the episode where a Super Hans is doing, he's got a quiz book with questions in and that. And you've got a question at the front, the answer in the back. And he goes, I have a mouth but cannot speak. I have a bed but do not sleep. What am I? And what's the answer? What would you guess is the answer there?
A river.
A river? Yeah. Mm-hmm. David Mitchell says a river, and he flicks it about and goes, no, Nicholas Lyndhurst. It's just the funniest thing ever. But I got my brother, for your birthday, I got you a couple of signed cards, signed photos that I'd found in this autograph shop in Nottingham while I was up there recording some podcasts. And I'd found them. I was only looking for stuff for you in there. I thought, I'll find some funny things. Yeah. And then on the wall, a bit more expensive, framed, was a signed photo of Nicholas Lyndhurst in Goodnight Sweetheart. And I was like, that's so good. And we left. It was me and B, and we left. And I was like, I can't spend that much, and his birthday isn't for ages. And we left, and I was just quiet. And B was like, you're right. I was like, I've got to go back and get that. So I went back and got it, and the dude was like, it's a bit of a story behind this one, if you'd like to hear it. I'm like, fucking would I? Go on, mate. And he's like, well, Nicholas notoriously doesn't really sign autographs because Only Fools and Horses was so big, blah, blah, blah. And everyone's always trying to get him signed pictures of Rodney and all these quotes and all that. And he was at the local Playhouse for a thing. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to take down a Goodnight Sweetheart one. I'm going to come from left field. He said, I was torn between Goodnight Sweetheart and Piglet Files. I'm like, all right. And he goes down and he said, he ignored everyone asking for autographs on these photos. He saw the Goodnight Sweetheart, signed it happily. He's just like, that's how he scammed a signed photo of Nicholas Lyndhurst. So yeah. I had that for months. And because it was my brother's 40th, so it was a big birthday, I've been telling my mum and dad, I've got him something really good for his 40th. It's a big birthday, so it's a big one. And then he opened that and I couldn't have been happier. And then recently, he's had to have, they're having new doors in all the rooms in my mum's house, which is where my brother lives. And he was like, he was there, and he came up the stairs, and he looked at the doorman, just looking confused at a signed photo of Nicholas Lyndhurst next to his bed, and my brother just went out. And he just said, I can either try and explain it, or I just go out. So he just looked and went, just going to go out.
Run away.
Just went back down the stairs and out the door. Oh, it's beautiful. Anyway, let's get on to some audience questions. I mean, we'll go into fighting in more detail later. But I want to find the person who asked about Fury, because we can address that now. Yeah, from James Creed. I've screenshotted them because I put my phone on airplane mode. And there's some comments after this, but I can't see them. But yeah, thoughts on Tyson Fury, his controversial comments from years back and his recent awareness raising of mental health and addiction. And it's something we talked about a little bit. I heard him on Rogan, and I thought he spoke so amazingly about.
Well, I'm kind of glad you did, because I've had like a mixed opinion and a more positive opinion than Fury for quite a while, and possibly because I didn't see when he made those comments, and so I didn't have like this overwhelming. I didn't worship him or anything. I just had he's not. I've listened to him speak at length, and he's not insane, and he's not a tyrant.
Yeah,
and that was it. That was all I'd had as an opinion. And I know he'd made comments that I hadn't seen firsthand. Well, none of us do, but obviously I hadn't seen in the media. You had, and they were bad comments. Well, terrible comments.
For me, it kind of makes me sadder, because as much as he's talking well, and that fight was legendary and all that, I still can't get down with him because of them comments, because it wouldn't be hard to directly address them. And the comments were, it was before the Klitschko fight. I printed it out because, again, I wanted it to be accurate and not give a misrepresentation.
Yeah.
The comments were, there are only three things that need to be accomplished before the devil comes home and takes over the earth.
Crocs.
One of them is homosexuality being legal in countries. One of them is abortion being legal, and the other one's paedophilia being legal.
Yeah.
Who would have thought in the 50s and 60s that those first two would ever become legalised?
Yeah.
So he's putting homosexuality and abortion next to paedophilia
and saying
that they're sins and they're bringing the devil to earth. And that shit, I can't get over it. He did address it. And again, I've done a bit of research on it because I kind of want to like the guy because he's gone through some shit and that's impressive. But even when he addressed it, he said, look, I've offended a lot of people I didn't mean to. I'm just repeating what God's words. It's not
that's his reply to it.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, that's not good enough. I need you to say, no, that's fucking ridiculous. And the fact is,
because don't kill the messenger in this instance doesn't really cut it.
And again, it made me, the end of that fight just made me even more sure that he still believes that, because the whole end of it was just praise Jesus, praise the Lord for forgiveness. Yeah, and it was all religious stuff. And it's like, well, you probably still believe all that. Fuck that. I don't care if you've rejuvenated the boxing world or you've had this great weight cut and this turnaround of mental health. That's fucking unforgivable shit to me.
Do you know what? I completely agree with that. But I think that, it is disgraceful. Because he speaks intelligently about other things. Like, he's not a fool.
Yeah.
And I just feel that, I just hope that people don't just cut him off and people talk to him about it and help him maybe come round on that decision in the future. Because if we just cut him off, that's it. It's done. And it's stupid, really, because what you said is gross and it's disgusting. It's ignorant.
Even on this one, he's no commented anyone who's brought up that. He's refused to address that. Yeah. He's like, it's stuff from previous interviews. I want to talk about what's going on now.
Which, again, I understand that.
I understand, but it's not good enough for me. No, I can't get down with that. It's like,
not good enough now. I think that, well, he maybe always, I think he needs to, 100%.
He believes
it. And I think that maybe
that's
he's
the
on
sad thing. He believes it. It's a strict religious thing.
Yeah, yeah.
An Irish religious thing, again, one of the great things that we discussed in the Drunkcast that wasn't released was that the abortion law got turned over in Ireland. And it was been an amazing thing this year, this huge achievement, this great step into the modern world. But that's the world he's from, you know? He's got that wrong side of religion from there, and it's disgraceful. So that's my answer to that guy.
Stu, what do you think, mate?
I can't get over it.
I kind of echo what you said, Chris, to be honest. You know, do you take into account that he's had probably a very, very different upbringing to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
He comes from a very different culture to what a lot of us are exposed to.
Yeah.
And then maybe going from that culture, well, he's still in that culture, but to then also be
having a microphone and a platform for the world.
And having a lot of money thrust upon you.
Yeah.
You know, are you surprised that maybe he said some stuff that's maybe not to the
I completely agree. I always find that with fighters. Don't expect progressive comments from them. Because, like, I think that maybe also, like, and I go back to that thing of where you grow up and where you come from. It's like, it's easy once you've got world or wider perspective to go, how the fuck have you come and you said that?
And the communities he comes from don't necessarily come from they don't get that perspective.
And
it's
so,
if
we cut them off and don't forgive them for it, it won't ever change. And then you enforce segregation, and that's the problem. Like, when we stop talking and we segregate, that's it. Like, if Tyson had felt more comfortable in areas of people who disagree with him on those points and might engage, he might find himself integrated and maybe meet some people who are homosexual, for starters, right, who have gone through abortions. And then all of a sudden these silly dogmatic doctrines in on a bit of paper and then real life will start to soften your view. And I think that's so important. Like, that's
just trying
the thing
to open
about
the dialogue
that.
And try and educate. But the problem I still have is I still can't celebrate that. It's not like as all this was going on.
I'm not celebrating that. Yeah. I'm saying that may be part of why he's expressing 100%. these opinions.
And that's kind of where I sit at the moment is, previously, I've shouted about that bullshit he said. Mm. I've done enough of that. In this instance, I didn't shout about it. I had one person who I chatted to a lot during UFC stuff, who's highlighted to me a lot of MMA fighters have had domestic abuse things in their history and stuff like that. That's horrible. So it's been, and she was asking about the Fury fight, and I kind of said, "Look, here's a quote from him. That's what I can't get down with." But that was, again, it was a direct to them tweet. So it wasn't like it was shouting about it. So it's that balance of, I'm not going to try and piss on his fire, but equally I can't sit around it.
Yeah. And that's absolutely fine, mate. And maybe at some point, maybe he will come around to that. Maybe he won't.
I tried to get him on the podcast a year or two back.
Really?
He was doing some stuff. I think it was at Global, which is where XFM is. And I was trying to get him on because I wanted to have that opportunity to bring it up. And not attack, but bring it up.
A mate of mine at work has got a picture of him with Fury. And I was like, when was that taken? He said, a couple of years ago. And I was like, let's see it. Because I thought... And he is not happy. Like, you can see he's a broken human in an airport. It's fucking, it's really sad, man.
Everything else aside, if you're going to be a boxer, it's the greatest fucking name ever.
It's an amazing Tyson Fury name. It's a golden name. It's
the definitely. Best fucking name.
And if you're going to have a comeback, let's just briefly talk about that. Have you guys seen that fight?
Yeah, I watched bits of it. I was up watching the UFC because I'm a UFC fan or an MMA fan. So I was watching it on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then when I'd heard it was all going that crazy, because of my feelings against Fury, for the first time ever, I illegally streamed a bit of a fight. Because I'm not personally into that. I don't try to get into arguments with people because I know how a lot of people watch. But on this one, I was like, I'll watch a link. And I watched that last round. And I've never seen a guy so out and then so not out.
Yeah,
you can't train that shit.
No,
it's not. It's not trainable. That's hard. It's a bit like when we won't talk too much more about fighting now. But like, even the punishment someone was taking this weekend.
Oh mate,
that's not trainable. That's something that's in your fucking dreams, in your mind.
Are we talking about the fights or your willy? Which way have we gone? Which story are we jumping to?
My dick is rising from the grave. And let's never have that put on a t-shirt.
Or just on this topic, again, we'll get into fights properly, but it's a prevalent one. There's a really interesting thing, or a disgraceful thing, in the UFC at the moment. And again, I've been accused before of being a UFC dick rider, because I'm a fan of a lot of what they're doing. I'm a fan of a lot of what Dana does. I find him amusing. Same. I'm not a fan of what's happened in the new year. A young lady, Rachel Ostrovich, she was... from the Tough Harnesses, fighting Paige VanZant. The fight was almost pulled because she was hospitalised by her boyfriend, who's also an MMA fighter, who beat the living shit out of her. Really horrific, like really in hospital, beaten up in a bad way. The fight is back on, which is really good news. And she's saying, I'm going to go out there and prove that I'm a strong woman in spite of this. Also on that card is a guy called Greg Hardy, making his debut, who there's a lot of hype around because he's a former American footballer. He was a very successful American footballer, but his American football career fell apart because of his domestic abuse issues he had. He beat up his missus. I think the charges were dropped in some way, but it was kind of acknowledged that it was all legit. And he's on the same card. And that just seems like the biggest clusterfuck or oversight by the UFC, putting someone who has been charged, if not convicted, but charged initially with domestic abuse on the same card as a woman who literally has just got out of hospital from being the victim of domestic abuse. And the UFC, Dana has commented it.
Did he get charged? Did he do time for it?
He didn't do time. I don't know the full details. I think it was dropped in court or something like that. But again, that's so common with domestic abuse because it's so personal. It's so often that things are dropped.
So where do you stand on... So say he did get charged with it, like just playing devil's advocate here, and he went to prison, he'd done his time and he come out. Mm-hmm. Is that forgivable then? Has he done his time?
I'm a big believer in people getting a second chance after prison. It sits more uncomfortably in something I like mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
As much as I think...
Putting him on a card sport. With someone that's just recently, like, that's just a fucking dumb shit idea.
Completely unforgivable. Yeah. I had question marks over it anyway, because it sits uncomfortable. If your previous conviction is violence, to then make a living off of violence feels uncomfortable to me. Yeah, that feels shitty. If he'd gone back to football, I'd kind of go, all right, well, if he's done his time, he might have to work his way back up. I can kind of... It's not great, but I can kind of I believe in redemption and things like that. But it sits poorly.
And again, it adds to that whole thing that we've spoke about many times of like trying to explain to people that you know mixed martial arts is a skill set. You know, it is an absolute art form. It's not
absolutely
a load of fucking animals just being thrown in a cage. And when they do things like that, the UFC, like some of the dumb shit they've done with the Conor hype and that.
And we'll get to all of that.
It just kind of leads you, you know, it just projects that kind of image that it is just fucking brawlers.
Yeah, but anyway, we'll get to MMA stuff later. I just wanted to bring that up because it feels equally, again, I'm not any kind of, I love the UFC, but still, you should call out anyone who's, you think is acting inappropriate. As I said, I think they could easily have put him on a different card.
Yeah.
It's, the fact is, he's jumping the line a bit because he's famous, and part of the reason he's famous is domestic violence, so it's fucked up. I've got a question here. Pip, your favourite episode of Off the Beaten Track podcast. Stu, your favourite Distraction Pieces episode this year. Chris, have you listened to any podcast yet?
such good. Like this guy. Who's this ball?
That's Emma Ball. Emma. The regular listener, so I knew that.
I was going to say, they know us so well.
That's so good. And the thing is, when we done Top 5 podcasts the other day with the lads from...
Dream Factory.
Josh, no, it wasn't Dream Factory, was it? It was...
Oh, Josh Ashtrop.
Yeah. Like, and when he did something in Top 5 podcasts, I just thought, you're going to get some guesswork tonight, mate.
So I'll answer mine quickly. I love the Lindy Layton episode. As I've said to you before, just the fact that you were hearing a man living his dream there. And she's just telling these amazing stories. And then she starts to sing one of the songs that she's picked.
Yeah.
And you're just like, obviously, I know you're a fan of her music and all that. So, that was a great one.
Was it hard to get 76 to edit out?
Oh, do you know what, right? We all know Lindy well, right? And she's come and she did the last lizards and she's a beautiful. She's beautiful, right?
Man. I used to she's come and played for us loads of times. And I'm not gonna lie, I've got a crush on Lindy.
Yeah, everyone's got a crush on Lindy. I had a crush on Lindy when I was a kid, do you know what I mean? I'll say a kid, I'm the same age as her. But
You had a crush on her when you were the age that Chris dresses.
Exactly.
You cannot say that about me anymore. This cunt over here has been dressing like an 18-year-old. Like,
I've heard he's had his cap on backwards.
He's loving it. He's absolutely loving it. The worst thing is I like everything he wears. I'm like, I really like that jumper.
I got proper annoyed on your... what's it called episode?
The one with Gemma.
No, Rumors. The London. I've forgotten the name of the brand now. The clothing brand.
Lovesick
London, because it comes. Chris starts like, I can't remember how I found you guys, but it's like I literally sat you down and showed them as an example of branding for Redshift and all this. I'm sitting there like, oh, for fuck's sake, that's my one bit. I thought I might get some free shit for giving the shout out and hooking up. Like,
free
I can't remember how I stumbled upon you, but you know, I'm young and hip. I find a lot of these things.
Can I just lower the tone of the podcast? Can I just have a quick wee in your new garden?
Sure. I've had a new garden.
What do you mean it's new? I haven't noticed.
You go and have a look. You go and have a look.
You can have a look.
I didn't get it done for free. I didn't even get a discount in the end. I paid full. But I will give a shout out to PA Gardens and Landscaping, who did an amazing job on my garden, as they've both gone outside to have a look. They've done an amazing job. And they originally...
You didn't realise how big your garden was, because it was such a dump.
It was an absolute mess.
It was a forest.
But I did this thing saying, can anyone hook me up in exchange for some advertising? And what I was after was a bit of a discount. I'll do some tweets and promote your company. Mm-hmm. And I had people furious, because they assumed for some reason, even though I said, do me a deal, they assumed I wanted it all for free. So these people responded to that and said, we'll give you X amount off in exchange. Or X amount off of labour.
Yeah,
I'm not going to say how much, because it's their business. That's their choice. But in the end, I paid them full price, because they just, look at this, they've smashed it, right? And they did it in no time. We had all sorts of dramas with, all sorts of dramas. But
No, it's a beautiful lawn, mate. Well done. Didn't think we'd ever Good get into that conversation.
Get into that.
Smashing long.
But Chris, have you listened to any podcast this year?
Almost no. Honestly.
Have you watched any? Because you're more of a watcher.
I've watched a couple of Joe Rogan episodes, but not many. Because mm-hmm.
We both talked a bit about the Elon Musk episode, and I was kind of... I wanted to hate it more than I did, because people were moaning about him.
Right, but I thought
he was... I didn't think he was... I thought it was a bit boring. I thought it was a bit boring. I liked his pauses. The big joke everyone had was his pauses. But good Lord, all three of us could benefit from pausing to think before we say
that's
things
all it
every
is,
now and
buddy.
Then.
Yeah, it really is it. That. And that's what
Joe
annoyed
would ask
me.
A question and he'd go...
Yeah, but
and then respond.
Well, that's giving a measured answer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I don't think we've ever done that. Have we?
No, 100% not. I'm wearing purple underwear right now. What would you like to know? No, I am. He does think about stuff, and the fact that he's waiting and how he hangs on words. I don't know, it's just his personality. People are going mental because that's it. It's like, well, why don't you listen to what he said? What he's saying?
But it's the typical thing of the internet now that people were mental either way. I saw people saying he's a genius, he's the best podcast ever, and he's mental, he's such a weirdo. Yeah, and I listened and thought, oh, it's all right.
Yeah, well, actually, that links in quite nicely because I think he was talking to... I don't know if he was... Rogan was talking to Peterson about this, or whether it was Peterson on another a thing I watched recently, which was a guy called Dave Rubin,
right?
And it was Peterson talking to a geezer called Ben Shapiro, who has controversy around him too. Yeah. And what they were discussing, which I found fascinating, is tweets and how we don't understand the psychology of tweets at the moment yet. Mm-hmm. There's not enough research to do. What's the propensity of people who use tweets? What's the propensity of people to say something aggressive on a tweet or radical one way or another?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're forced to use 140 characters. So then are you not therefore going to lean towards margins because you haven't got the time to really express an opinion that is
nuanced?
Yeah. And so then is it dangerous then to be someone like maybe of your size, Pip, where you've got quite a lot? Is it dangerous to read comments? Because how damaging is that to your psyche?
Yeah.
Because people are just going to go one way or the other.
Yeah.
You know, that probably a sensitive fellow like myself, I don't think I'd want to read.
It does affect you, man. And there is these constant and extreme things. I reposted one the other day because it was the epitome of someone angry about something they've been told to be angry about. Because I did a post for the... International Rescue, it's the IRC, International Rescue
Thunderbirds.
Something. No. Is it Rescue?
Isn't that isn't that like the WWE?
No, but they've got, it was this great video and they did a thing about...
Back in the 90s and they had Sting was their big wrestler.
No.
And he looked like the Crow.
No.
No, okay.
That was WCW and then TNA. So they were talking about how at Christmas we waste a lot of money on a lot of shit. And we'll buy some tat to give to someone and they're not going to enjoy it and they're going to think it's tat. And we do a lot of that, like particularly with stocking fillers and stuff like that. And their point was, just don't buy that and instead donate it to a good cause and we'll help save lives and all this. And one person commented going, yeah, and the money will probably go to a 25-year-old who's claimed he's 12, but there's oh my no way God. Of checking. And my response was, I don't give a fuck how old someone who is... who needs asylum is. No. Again, it's because there was this big news story of we're only accepting people under this age and people are sneaking. It's like, if someone's in need and in need of asylum, that shouldn't be a big deal. There shouldn't be a kind of... I like it at fun fairs, we have to be height under this height to get on. You have to be under this height to receive, to qualify for compassion. And it's just that thing of just, here's the thing I'm meant to be furious about. It's like, just shut up. But
Yeah, think about things before you whip out your pitchfork.
Yeah,
so that's weird when people get angry about that.
I had a mate
start like berating homeless people the other day. He wasn't around a homeless person, but he's like, oh, I never give them money because they could spend it on drugs. And I'm like, I don't care. Like, I haven't always got the time because I'm not going to sit here and say sound overly pious and go, well, what I do just to make sure he doesn't shoot smack into his eyeballs. Right, is go and buy him a fucking Greg sausage roll. You know, I ain't got the time for that. And I often will, like, a lot of my charity money goes to homeless people. I probably spend up to £10 a week. It's not a lot, I understand that, but it's in pound coins. Yeah. I understand that. But I do that. Up to, it's probably it's 40 quid a month, that
on,
is.
On the Rutger Bregman episode, he talks about how money to homeless people is a better solution than all these different kinds of charity and things like that. But again, the argument as well, because that is the most common argument, they're probably going to spend it on alcohol or drugs. And my kind of thing is, well, yeah, I'd assume so. It's freezing and you're on the street. I didn't think they're going to be saving up to get a widescreen or saving up to get a degree or whatever. It's like, fucking fair play, they want a beer. You're literally living on the streets. You want a whiskey or whatever. I can understand that. But again, in Rutger Bregman's A Utopia for Realists book, and shortened in the episode,
which, by the way, is one of my favourite podcasts you've done of the three I listen to. The other two,
he's just amazing.
Pretty much us.
He's just Aaron amazing. Runcast, right? And I won't ramble about it too much, but he highlights the reason that giving money is a far better solution, even than giving soup kitchen type care and stuff like that, because there's so many overheads and all these other things. And yeah, he's got studies and everything, so go and listen to that episode. But with that, Stu, the question was, what's your favourite distraction pieces of the year? And we don't have to spend ages on this. I'm not an egotist right now.
I enjoy Paloma Faith.
Yes.
And I enjoyed Kate Nash.
Yes.
But
both of them surprised a lot of people, because people expect them to be a bit
grating. But I know that you're friends with him, so I was expecting something quite warm when I got that. But as we're all sitting here as Uber fans and Essex boys, I think Liam Hallett was just... I speak to you, we speak once or twice a week, and it's like, oh, who you got coming up? What you got on? And when you said, I've got Liam Hallett, that's like, that's the fucking...
I strangled three stray animals because of that.
That's right.
Three more.
And gave stray animals.
They're stomachs now.
But he's... The Prodigy and Depeche Mode are our heroes for Essex, right? They're our musical fucking legends, you know? Not so much you, Pip, but...
I had Liam and John Cooper Clarke in the same week.
Yeah. Well, he's an Essex boy now, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And again, it's like proper icon level things. And the Liam one, you're exactly right. It felt special at the time, because he doesn't do particularly long interviews.
No, he doesn't. He never has.
And we got to the hour mark, which is obviously my catchphrase.
Yeah.
We'll talk about catchphrases, actually.
Oh, yeah.
We got to the hour mark, and I was like, are you in a rush? And because it was in his studio, he was like, no, we can keep... So to get to do over 2 hours...
Yeah.
Do you know Liam, what? Who doesn't
I haven't
do
listened. I still haven't listened to it. So I've got a list of podcasts I haven't listened to, and that's my number one. And it's like, I'm almost like... It's like, I don't want to listen to it for many reasons. One, because I want to savour it. Yeah. One, because I'm a little jealous. And I even said it at the intro for our podcast that's being released on Monday. I can't believe that you got to a point where you know and hang out and have done a podcast with...
He wears my merch on stage.
That's mental.
Like, he's regularly worn my merch on stage, which blows my mind. And I've never given him any free stuff. So he's gone on my website, ordered some merch.
Like, motherfucker, can I afford to buy the merch? And I love the fact that Liam... No, but what I mean, I love the fact that you can get that from his personality. You know that he would pay for your merch. Yeah. Because that's the sort of person he is. And I'm only getting that from the very rare snippets of information I've had from him, let alone the podcast.
Give away a secret now. It's an episode that's not coming out until February, but I recorded one the other day with Stephen Merchant.
No.
And it's great. And he's got a bit in it which made me think of the thought of Liam Howlett going on my website and ordering stuff seems weird. But the reason how Stephen Merchant's new film came about was The Rock... and Stephen tells it amazingly, so I won't go into tons of detail, but the Rock was over here filming The Fast and the Furious, and he was in his hotel room watching Channel 4, and he saw this documentary, and just the thought of The Rock watching Channel 4 is, for some reason the most bizarre, strange thing. And he goes into a lot more detail on it, but it's genuinely, as soon as you say it, it's like, why is that weird? But it really is. The thought of The Rock watching Channel 4.
Well, Chris D'Alien does this a lot, doesn't he? When he goes, imagine what that person was thinking. Yeah. And so I've been doing that a lot recently. And one of the ones I thought of is, when you see pictures of, like, poos in toilets, which I see way more than I think I should. Right?
Tell me more.
That person, that everyone who's taking that photo, is yet to wipe their bum. My old head taking
their
picture.
I'm now picturing them getting their balance with their left arm holding the camera to cocking their right leg whilst wiping.
Exactly. It might not be perfectly in focus because on the back of their mind, they're like, I've still got a job to do.
Yeah. I'm still keeping my bum cheeks a bit open because I don't want them to go together and do a Rorschach. Shitty block test.
You can't throw a block roll down that, can you? It will ruin the composition.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's true. But anyway, I don't know how we got to that. But yeah, Liam was a cracking guest.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
But Liam was a cracking guest.
Name three albums you could listen to all the way through without skipping a song. Let's just go for one each.
We still haven't done that, have we?
No. Well, I was going to be doing this thing called Perfect Album Playback. I don't know if I mentioned it on here. It was going to, but I've just got, this sounds like a tough problem. I've got so many guests at the moment. Yeah, it's ridiculous. But I was going to do, every Friday, I'd do an episode that was an album that me and you love, and we want to just go through a perfect album, or me and you, and Mangan was lined up as well, and Stu Tell, but just haven't got around to it. But they've asked for three. Let's have one each. Amazing. I'll go straight off with, because I want to talk about my album of the year, a Tierra Wax, a Whack World album. Is I've talked about it on the Kate Tempest episode, and a lot of people ask how it's spelled. It's T-E-I-R-A-R-R-A. Tierra Whack, and then W-H-A-C-K. And she released an album this year, and she's up for a Grammy. And I did a tweet saying, it's mad how quickly I went from, oh my God, Tierra Whack's up for a Grammy, that's amazing, to why isn't she up for more Grammys? Because it's just... No, right. So she released this album, and my brother sent it to me, or the YouTube link, because it was this a 15-minute a YouTube video. And her album is 15 one-minute songs, and she made this one long 15-minute video for it. And it's absolutely amazing. Like, the tracks are amazing, the beats, it's... You, at first, it feels gimmicky, and then you realise the restraint of it, because there's a couple of them on there that could just be pop bangers, like radio hits, that they stop after a minute. Amazing.
I didn't even know any of
it. Was amazing at that time, because I watched the video, and me and Polar Bear were raving about it. I watched the video, and it's this 15-minute thing. And I've got a short attention span at times, particularly if I'm rushing about. And my brother sends me a lot of music and stuff, and I'd go, yeah, I'll listen. Yeah. It's that late. And I thought, I'll start it, I'll skip ahead at some point. I watched a whole 15, and then I grabbed the album and realised I assumed it was snippets of the album, and then I realised, no, that's the full album. And then I went on her Instagram, and at that point, her Instagram was just a 15 videos, because videos on Instagram are a minute long.
A minute.
So, and there's three, so it's five rows of three.
So
it's literally, the front cover, it was just an image. But if you click on any of them, it starts that part of the video.
No.
And it was just mind-blowing. Her Instagram is now a lot of other stuff, because she's blown up hugely. But you can probably still scroll down and get to that point where it was just this perfect art project,
that's
essentially.
Great.
And she's, she's a rapper and singer, and from, like, I think she's from Philly or New York, maybe. It's amazing. But that, I mean, it's easy to pick. But I've listened to
three
or four times in a row. Without skipping a track. So it's one of them, it's like, because it's 15 minutes long.
Yeah.
So fucking, it's easy, but yeah, all killer.
Man, I can't wait to listen to that.
It's really, really good, man.
And 15 minutes,
first.
You can...
The video
can,
first is just the thing to just, yeah, it's amazing. Whack shot world. And directed.
Yeah.
Whack World, yeah.
Sick, dude. How about you, Shane?
Fats and Smalls.
hey! What's wrong with you? You said you've been watching videos of us on YouTube. Is that one of me singing that in the mountains?
No, I couldn't find that one. I think that might be on Instagram. Did you say it's got to be from this year?
No. It doesn't. Right. I've added that just because we're doing a year roundup. But I've not given you a heads up to prepare, so I don't expect...
So I think I'm going to swerve... The obvious ones, the Marvin Gaye's and the Pet Sounds and things like that. And I'm going to go for No More Shall We Part by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds.
Right.
Because I think it's like a perfect point in his career. 15 Feet of Pure White Snow's on it. God Is in the House is on it.
I've never got into him.
Yeah, love him.
I've never got into him. I don't know why, but people have, yeah.
Yeah, I really like it, and you know, I know you're very well liked for your lyrics, and as a lyricist, he's a fucking genius.
Is he better? Would you say than Pip?
Definitely.
Mm. It's tough, definitely. It's tough to say, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Art, well, subjective.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, you could, but.
Pip just took my Christmas present back.
It's all subjective, but what was that song Timmy Mallon wrote?
Chris, album that you can listen to all the way through. I'm going off on a tangent after this because I had a really good.
Oh, okay.
Are you done? Sorry.
Well, as soon as I mentioned that I liked it more than you, you've just fucking moved on to Chris.
Anyway, Chris.
we've got 40 minutes left. Chris, let's talk about yours.
Distraction pieces. I would actually say Distraction Pieces is one of them, but I won't blow your trumpet. It is the shit. This is an easy one. Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah. 100%.
Like, all day long. It's like. I weirdly ended up. I don't share a lot on Facebook these days.
First album,
yeah.
And but I shared like the brass.
I saw you done that.
I put that on and I was busy. Like, I had somewhere to go. Like, I had to jet out.
Is that the first time you've seen it?
And I saw that and I was like, "It's 6 minutes. I'm not going to watch all of this." It's a brass band's version of Wake Up.
Of Wake Up.
And Wake Up.
No,
so
she does them all.
God,
go on to their page, because I don't know what the vocalist's name is, but I clocked this about 3 or 4 months ago, and she does Sleep Now in the Fire, and like her doing Bullet in the Head, it's fucking off the scale.
It's so good, mate. It's weird because she made me love Wake Up. I think Wake Up was always great, but I don't know, because everyone loved it. I did sort of shy away. I did have that ego reaction accidentally, you know, which we all do. And I shied away from it a bit. And just listening to them redo it, I realised quite how fucking tremendously brilliant just Wake Up is. Wake Up is one song of, like, what, 12 utter bangers.
Mm.
Utter bangers that in a time, and I was thinking this when I was watching that, like, they, in that Ink record sleeve, say, Fursey's got one of the most powerful record sleeves of all time. It's not even their, you know, them, but it's a very well-picked image of the Buddhist monk setting himself on fire. Like, in that sleeve, it says, look, none of the stuff you hear on this has been, you know, done in the studio. This is all done live with... And at a time when their new metal was big, which Rage Against the Machine were so good, I think that a lot of new metal bands might have had to feel that to do that rap rock thing, they might have needed a little something. Like, you needed to put someone with a set of turntables on there.
Mm.
But they were so good lyrically. The composition of all of their songs is fucking mind-boggling.
People who aren't into Rage have misspotted them and put them in that new metal bracket.
No.
Which they're not. It's similar as me and Josh were talking about with Rancid on the Boogaloo our radio thing, where Rancid get put in with all the pop punk. And it's like, no, they're a proper punk and ska band. They're so credible. And Rage are the same there, that you've got this kind of, this new metal feel that people turn their nose up at. And rightfully so in places. Understandably so, let's say. Not
understandably
rightfully.
So.
Understandably
but let's have it right.
Let's have it right. I decided... That's his catchphrase. He says it in every outline. Let's have it right.
It's not. We're, it's not like.
Let's have it right. Let's have it right.
So let's have it right.
And you tried like so hard to not say it for the rest of the day when we're out, and then we're on an escalator. He goes, "Let's have it right." But, oh fuck!
But Rage weren't when new metal come out. No. Rage was when grunge happened.
Yeah.
Rage come out in what, 91, 92, and like. And when that came out, I mean, yous would have been fucking kids.
Yeah.
And I was just started, like, alternative clubbing.
Yeah. I was terrified.
And bearing in mind, you had the crossover stuff like Faith No More and Primus, and you had bits and bobs happening like that. And obviously you had the Public Enemy Anthrax stuff. But no one got it, that kind of aggression and... perfect blend of hip hop and rock.
You kind of, I, in my ignorance, because I was getting into it a little bit later, you'd have your Head PE or your Papa Roach.
Yeah.
A few years later, you'd realise, oh, they've nicked all of those lines from the best rap songs ever. Rage was this. It was.
Well, because it had ridiculous amounts of meaning. It's beyond, like, if you listen to Wake Up now, like when I first listened to Wake Up, I just enjoyed it. It was angry. Yeah. And I didn't know fuck all about the world at all. Because the first time I listened to that record, people, I don't think I ever spoke about this, but you played it to me in a, on a fucking Walkman in the car park of Palmer's. And it was just me thrashing around in a car park of Palmer's, just having the best time of my life. I couldn't believe what I was listening to. It was like, it blew my fucking brain. And I didn't really know what Wake Up was about. But if you, like, it was weird because even now, like, as I say, I overlook it so much because it's so popular. I was listening to this girl sing it and get an opportunity to go reflect back over the lyrics and the meaning of the song. Mm. It's fucking, it's so amazing and it's so cool. But it's also so ridiculously intellectual. And how many bands? How many bands can really, truly do that? And yet, I think that if bands took more time, and any music production took more time to want to say something first, then you can make cool shit off a result of it. And that's what happens: is Wake Up and
completely. Oh God, I mean, a good a good tangent. I want to go off on this. On I moved away. I dropped something. Was I was driving home the other day. And I made note of something I wanted to talk about on the drunk cast because I just wanted us three to be a bit drunk and talk about it because we'll get really excited. I just popped on Pearl Jam 10 and just had a lovely time just remembering how great a record it is. And my note initially was just how bloody awesome a Pearl Jam discuss because I was one that I, and in at that time, I thought Versus was the better of the two albums. Everyone raved about 10. Now I kind of feel it's, I feel them evenly, but I think 10 might have taken over. And the notes I made were that Pearl Jam, there's three people who are responsible for weird changes. And so it was always Pearl Jam v Nirvana. And Nirvana were great, but Pearl Jam
had this... Why, though? I don't know why.
It shouldn't be Versus anyway, but ironically.
Didn't it?
But Nirvana were great, but Eddie had a unique voice. Like no one had heard that vocal style before. A lot came after, and he was responsible for a lot of teens, teenage boys at that time, to think that they could sing.
Yeah.
Because going, yeah.
Yep.
In the same way that Alanis Morissette was responsible for a lot of teenage girls.
Creed made millions pretending to be Pearl Jam.
And
the band, not Apollo.
And Jamiroquai made a lot of teenage boys at that time think they could dance. Yeah. I remember going down the brush from being casual moved side to side to suddenly everyone's sliding along and doing all their footwork and shit like that. And it's like, you must have seen that at the brush, that there was suddenly this transition from awkward shoegazing bobbing to like, proper going for it. And those three come to mind. But the only, I love Alanis still. I'm not so much a Jamiroquai fan. But Pearl Jam are one that it just feels, it holds up, man. And I think they got, not overlooked, they're one of the biggest bands of all time. But I think because Kurt Cobain died, it kind of became Nirvana and then Pearl Jam, and they were always compared and contrasted. Whereas as a standalone band, just... And lyrically, the bit that got me on this drive and has always got me is that I know someday you'll have a beautiful life. I know you'll be a star in somebody else's sky, but why can't it be mine? Oh, it's just...
When you see that live...
Yeah.
Like... And then what?
Like,
a load of middle-aged men singing along as well.
And it's beautiful because when they do it live, Eddie adds another bit at the end. When they're doing the at the end, as it breaks down, he starts screaming, I won't do the vocal. We belong together. Fucking hell. Yeah. It's goosebumps every time. It's like,
let's have it right, we belong together. That's how the line goes.
Do you know what I mean? But
my love of just amusing myself ruined that part of the song on this drive, because me and B were driving back from Monkey World, which is amazing, by the way, and this was on In Traffic to Blur, and he's done the I Know Someday You'll Have a Beautiful Life, and I'm getting a bit emotional just sitting there. And then just to break it, I just started going... Which scared the shit. B almost jumped out of the car because I was just full volume. Which my mum used to get annoyed because I'd do things where I'd see how loud I could be in the car. Because in a confined space, I mean, that's just Chris's life, but in a confined space, that's an exciting thing to do. Just see how loud you can go. But yeah, I just, how fucking great a Pearl Jam, man.
Do you know what? Have you seen the Pearl Jam 20 film?
No.
And I'll tell you what, right? It's
I'd say.
I went off them a bit. I kind of forgot that they're great. They became that kind of slightly cliche.
If you watch
band.
That film, that film will make you realise just how fucking great they are.
Yeah.
It's made by Cameron Crowe.
Yeah.
Who's a mega fan.
Yeah.
I hope I got that right. if not, Brett, yeah. if you can.
Mm-hmm. He wouldn't have heard it through the burp.
The girl in the mask, right?
Yeah. And but it just documents their career and the fact that they just thought that
the guy from Gladiator,
yeah, Ticketmaster or Ticketmaster were like, they just weren't having it, that they were, you know, being held to what Ticketmaster wanted to charge fans, so they were like, no, fuck it, and like, they took them to court and we they said we're going to do it ourselves, and like just everything they do, and they're just a proper unit, and that film documents it from day one, and he talks openly about the fact that, you know, he was cool with Kurt. I don't know why there was this kind of comparison, because they're two very different bands. As I see it, you know, if you're going to
even, you know, it's weird because I can't even see the relation.
Yeah, because for me, Nirvana were just a straight up punk band. You know, they were just like and a pop band. Like Nevermind's, as I've said many times, the greatest pop album ever made. Every single song's got the greatest choruses, the best hook lines, and it's fucking amazing. But Pearl Jam were more that traditional kind of rock band. Do you know what I mean? They had guitar solos that were sort of lent themselves a little bit to Zeppelin and stuff like that. I think they wore their influences a little bit more on their sleeve. But I think as they've progressed as a band, I just think they're great. And 10, you know, I had long hair and a pair of shorts when that came out, and like everyone else did. And, you know, we was all jumping around in the clubs to Once and Why Go Home and things like that. It's fucking brilliant.
And you forget how mental that they were alive back then, him throwing himself off speaker stacks and all sorts
crazy.
Of riotous gigs.
Yeah.
I mean, you now think of them as, like that guy's, that voice.
Yeah. And let's talk about that voice quickly, because especially on 10, like Blackie's the one that everybody says he's, you know, the stand, and he's, you know, it's an amazing record, but his vocals on Release Me at the end, fucking hell. And like, and you know, Alive and Jeremy have been, and, what was the other single? Alive, Jeremy, and was Once a single? I can't remember.
Yeah, Once.
Like, a rinsed, absolutely rinsed. Like, but there's a reason they're rinsed. They're fucking great records.
Do you think they got killed off a bit and became a less credible feeling thing after the Crash Test Dummies happened?
Oh, right.
When that guy suddenly came out with, just a very deep voice. I proper love the Crash Test Dummies when they came out. I guarantee I've got them in my CDs there somewhere. The
Crash Test Dummies.
Or somewhere at Beyond the Sea.
Also done Peter Pumpkinhead from Dumb and Dumber. But I don't think he sings that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like, you'd know the song as soon as you hear it, because it's in Dumb and Dumber. But, and it's really good. Well, I've not heard it since the mid-90s. Maybe it's not.
It's been a while.
But Crash Test Dummies.
Yeah, just what I was trying to throw there. Anyway, shall we go back to more questions? We're kind of at the end of this hour almost.
Yeah, so we're
going to have to push a Chris's Willy into the next hour.
Oh. I've been doing that for months, buddy. I've been doing that for months.
Who would win in a fight? A Chrissy Goldtouch, Scroob, or Poundland Robbie Williams? I don't really care on that one. I'm not compared.
That whole thing was just so you could say Poundland Robbie Williams, wasn't it?
That's great.
Anyway, on to the next one. Stu and Chris once spoke on Hardcore Listens about... I should have said who said that. That was Jack Martin.
Jack, good thank work. You, Jack. So, Poundland Robbie Williams, that's good.
Ross Gallagher says, Stu and Chris once spoke on Hardcore Listens about Heineken Cream in Ireland. Is it really that good? I've never had a good pint of Heineken in the UK. It's been appalling. Have they experienced better?
Well, I firstly hate Heineken.
Yes, yeah, so do I.
So, who's this Stu, did you say?
It said Stu and Chris.
Who was
Ross Gallagher.
Ross, I can't remember.
Because I think you're talking about the Guinness.
Yeah.
Because I had a Guinness Pale Ale.
No, that was the Guinness Pale Ale, which was creamy.
That's what I thought. I thought, as soon as I read that, I was like, well, I only remember the Guinness. I know you've mentioned the Guinness Pale Ale.
I don't think we did.
I remember the drink.
I think I'd feel like something had changed in my life. I think up would have become down if I liked anything Heineken.
The drinks that stand out for me was when we went to that lock-in with Blind Boy. And we had the
It was amazing.
When we all had a Guinness.
And you chafing fags off everyone. I loved his. I loved how he was thinking, his, robbing fags like me at Palmer's thing on College. No.
It's amazing. He's got a series on iPlayer. I've only watched one episode. And it's the first episode is looking at social housing and the way housing has been done. And it's amazing because it's...
With the bag on his head?
Yeah, it's as irreverent as you'd imagine. It's incredibly offensive, but it's amazingly intelligent. Again, it's what we know of Blind Boy. If you've just seen this guy with a bag on the head, you don't know that he's this intelligent, educated... Yeah.
That's such a really troubling thing with Blind Boy, because when you start talking about rubber bandits and like... And then you go, there's a great... there's this song I want to talk to you about. And then you're like, it's called Spastic Hawk.
Yeah.
Like you struggle to sometimes Spastic get the buy-in.
Yeah.
But it's an amazing song. Yeah. It's an amazing music video. But sometimes people aren't ready for you to say Spastic Hawk.
But I recommend, honestly, both of you just watch his thing on iPlayer.
Oh, no. Because
it was just... I was ready, kind of as you said there, as he still got the bag on his head, I was ready for it to be a toned-down thing.
Yeah.
Because it's the BBC. It's not at all. It's full.
Brilliant.
It's offensive, but amazing and articulate and intelligent and attacking the right people.
He was great fun.
Yeah.
We had a fucking blast that night, didn't we?
Absolute dude.
Proper laugh. Mm. Yeah.
I will have to head back at some point.
Definitely.
Let's smash through a few more. Any films you wanted to see this year but didn't get a chance to?
Strangely, I've not seen many movies this year. So when we do the movies I'm like the antithesis of that. I've not seen many.
There's one that comes to mind that I want to see and haven't had a chance yet because people are saying it's amazing, is the new Spider-Man one. The Spider-Verse one that's out.
Oh, Into the Spider-Verse.
It's meant to be absolutely. Yeah, like everyone's saying it's literally next level. And I would have skipped an animation Spider-Man.
I think what people are doing now in storytelling is they're realizing how far we can push it. And actually, you're seeing more Japanese influence with it and Eastern media, where you just have these batshit fucking ideas in it.
Yeah.
And I think the Western world are now starting to have a taste towards that. So yeah, Into the Spider-Verse looks absolutely awesome.
Can we talk a little bit about A Journeyman? Just because it came up on one, I think it was on the podcast.
Yeah.
I will say that when we're going to talk about films of the year, that's the one. That's my film of the year.
Because that was it. Sometimes if you listen to a podcast, you want to be there and say stuff.
Yeah,
it's worse if you come up every now and then. So whenever I come up, I'm like, no, that's not what I meant. That's not the point. But it wasn't discussed, rightfully so, because you were talking about Robin Williams films. But you mentioned that. Or B might have mentioned, I was mad at you for not going to see Journeyman in the cinema. And Chris, kind of understandably, it might have been better for you because you saw it at home, which meant you could more comfortably get emotional and all that. But the point of that was, knowing that film in particular, how much of a struggle it is for these films to get made these days. And the cinema release is such a big deal. And it wasn't
genuine. And it felt like Paddy was quite outspoken about that on social media.
I know that you've got a family and kids and we live in Essex and these films, you have to go into London for that. Yeah. So it was a joking annoyance. But my argument was, you're a fan of Paddy and a fan of boxing. Like, you're literally the target audience.
Yeah.
So if he can't get you in the cinema, the production companies are right in saying, oh, we're not going to make that. There's not a demand for it. So it's more that it's kind of...
I paid £5.50 to watch it on Prime.
Yeah. So, as I said, I rant about it a lot online because I think it is on us as the public to go out and support good films. Because everyone says, oh, but cinema's so expensive. A cinema's breaking box offices constantly. Venom has broken most of the box office records this year. But it's only these big films that people will go out and see. So it's not a case of... We don't want to go and see it, but it's as I said, I think we're going to have more and more. It's been interesting this year where I've seen a lot. Most of my films of the year have been smaller independents, and that scares me a bit because they're not going to continue to be made in the current market. Because if the only thing that makes money is superhero films, it's the same thing as we were saying about petitioning companies. They're private companies, it's their choice. I can understand from a business point of view.
But then that's a simple analogy of the dangers of capitalism.
Yeah, completely.
And how it creates homogeneity. I don't know if that's a homogeneous product.
Yeah,
because they're only ever going to follow the demand and what makes money.
that's what I like about the BBC is they have a responsibility to make and create art. Yeah. So they can't only be on financial, but films, it's a different thing. And I think you'll agree, Journeyman is one of the best films I've ever seen. And it's not, I went in ready to not enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Just because I know Paddy proper loves his boxing. I'm not that into boxing films. And it's not a boxing film. It's so much more than that. It's a beautiful, gritty drama that the story happens to focus around boxing. But
yeah. Have you seen it?
I genuinely not seen it. I'll tell you the movies I've watched this year. It's bullshit.
I spoke to... My mate literally said to me, finally getting around to watching Journeyman tonight. And I went, just fucking strap yourself in, mate.
Yeah, man.
Like, because I've never had to stop a film and like and go and literally compose myself because I was in fucking bits. Like, and so is she, Jodie Whittaker. He's fucking amazing in that. But it's just different league what he's done in that film.
Journeyman, and there was a film called Dark River, which I really enjoyed as well, which is similarly dark, but I think they both really tackled these harsh subjects, but without any holding back. Like, Jodie Whittaker's character makes some really tough choices. It's not just the simple, I'll support your man. It's the reality of that's not always easy.
Especially when the shit that's going on in that film goes on. Yeah. Fucking hell.
Man might also be a total dickhead.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen it, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's, as I said, it's fucking, yeah, it's mind-blowing.
Mm.
So was this best movies of the year?
No, I was just sneaking that in. Any films you want to see this year but didn't get a chance to. Okay. So I just thought because of the cinema thing that came up.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there anything that comes to mind for either of you?
I haven't seen, and it sounds really, I don't know if it's cool or not, but... I haven't seen the... I'm not a Queen fan, but I've not seen a Freddie Mercury film.
No. Mate, it blew me away.
A Star is Born, I've not seen.
Yeah, I've not seen that.
I'd like to see it. Yeah.
And
I went reluctantly to see a Bohemian Rhapsody. I mentioned it to you, because I was like, I'm trying to see all the films that I should see because I'm doing my Films of the Year podcast, and I was stunned at how much I enjoyed a Bohemian Rhapsody. It blew me away. But I've heard the same on A Star Is Born.
Yeah.
There's two films I wish that you'd been to, or that you'd see, and they are, because they're two ones that I watched and thought, oh, you'd dig this. And similar with Chris, I came out of Hotel Artemis and messaged immediately going, dude, this is for you. This is a film for you. But with you, is
Flubber.
Is the Flubber 5.
Yep.
no, the MIA documentary.
Flubbered again.
Right, yeah.
Which is mind-blowing.
Yep.
But The More You Ignore Me. Which is Joe Brand wrote
Have you seen that?
Yeah, I went
to see
it. Did
Joe Brand write
that? Yeah, I believe she wrote and directed it. And it's all about kind of, it's about mental health, but it's also about Morrissey, and it's about that.
And it obviously stars the most beautiful woman in the world.
Who?
Sheridan Smith.
Yes. It's fantastic. It's really good. Her performance in it is mind-blowing.
She's fucking amazing.
Yeah, all
Sheridan Smith is, I do think she's one of Britain's best at the moment.
It's cracking. It's a really good film. I lucked out. I was in London for two screenings, and I had like a 3-hour gap in between, and it happened to be on at the Empire in Haymarket, and I was like, I'd heard you mention it, I think, and I was like, I'll keep an eye out, and it just happened to be on at the exact right time. It was £3 a ticket, because the Haymarket in the day is dirt cheap. So again, it's that kind of the belief that all cinemas are expensive. Like, depends on how much you want to spend.
Yeah.
If you go at the right times, or you don't, if you buy your own food and all things like that, which, But yeah, it's really good. I was surprised. I don't know. I'm not going to go hugely into films when we get to that in the next part. Because obviously I'm doing my end of the year films list. But that's one that it's on the cusp. I don't know if it's going to be in my top ones. It probably is.
Yeah.
I know that Journeyman and Dark River are, because they're probably, they're two that have just blown me away, but that's one that is, the way I do it is I note every film I see this year, and I put a star by the ones that might be in the...
Oh, God, do you know what? Do you know what? That is... I've never listened to any of your end-of-year film reviews, which is really weird, because of our relationship.
You don't listen to podcasts.
But that will motivate me to not do things other than watch shit on YouTube. Yeah, like, it's really weird that I've missed so many things this year when I've, like, had, like, a spare 2 hours and I'm, like, just exhausted. And instead of planning something and doing something that will motivate me, I just watch bollocks.
Yeah.
And so, like, this year... fair enough. But this year, I think I'd be interested to do that myself so that I could actually
It's been really good to have that motivation. The fact that I'm doing this list. And the fact I get invited to see a lot of screenings is good because that's some good feels. But when I had my week away to write, I had no Wi-Fi and stuff. So I just took a box set of films my brother had bought me. And I wrote, and then at lunchtime or dinner, I watched a film. And the one day, I'd got some good writing done. It was like 3 or 4 days in. I thought, I'm going to get Netflix up and watch something. It felt like when you have a pizza after being healthy and it doesn't deliver.
Yeah.
I felt shit. I was like, everything I've been watching has had such content and been so amazing. Yeah. And then I've just flinged something on Netflix, and it's felt so empty and shit. And now I'm back home, I watch a lot of the empty and shit stuff. But it was interesting to have that clean living run of just these real beautiful French films that every scene is slaved over, and then I just thought I'll treat myself to a Netflix thing, and it was,
you know what, and I've been so disappointed this year in film, and it wasn't because there wasn't good film. It was because I did do a sort of, like, there were some like monster flicks and that I went I'll watch that, and I was just like, oh man, that didn't deliver. And I don't normally have high expectations, as we well know, but I was still like, oh, God. So when you talk about movies that I'm gutted I haven't seen, Black Klansman, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs is a fucking film I still haven't seen. Well, Bohemian Rhapsody. What else was it? There was another one I just saw, because I've had to pull them up.
Sorry to bother you. It's blown me away this year. And there was a lot of controversy because that and Black Klansman were kind of positioned as rival films because
That was recent. That came out when Widows came out.
It's just come out,
December 7th. Yeah, like Widows are quite fancy. Yeah. But there's been so many. It's more a year of the films I haven't. And a lot of the films I've picked have been dirge.
Oh, me and you are doing a film marathon, aren't we?
Yeah.
Because I got sent a load of, who is it? John Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
They've remastered a load of John Carpenter classics to 4K to make them these amazing things. And I got hit up saying, are you interested in these? And there was a screening. I was like, I've not been that into his stuff, but if you've got the Blu-rays, I know a guy. So I instantly hit up Chris and Mark and was like, if they send me a load and we've got four, we're just going to have a little movie marathon.
We've been trying to make it happen.
Because I think a lot of them I've probably seen over the years, but don't remember that much.
Fundamentally, they make up a lot of what I watched as a kid, and I absolutely worship, so I can't wait.
Your horror episodes of Hardcore Listing, when you watch them, there seems to be a lot there that you're kind of, I think I've seen it, I kind of remember it, and that's how I am with them ones. It's kind of, I know these films, but I don't really... Yeah. I might have just heard people talking about them.
Yeah.
I'm
not interested in coming around for your film night, but my missus would be all over that. Yeah, she fucking loves a horror.
Oh, no, God. Like, if she wants to come over, there are movies there that I think...
Carpenter scored them as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
Not all of them, but he had parts in it, definitely. And, yeah, he's attacked. That's what blows my mind. He's done such a wide range of movies, but for fun and action and comedy, Big Trouble in Little China is absolutely genius.
As I've said, trained with Carter Wong.
Carter Wong. That is ridiculous, mate. That really is.
Man, I am jealous. Old,
do you know who Carter Wong is?
No.
Have you seen Big Trouble in Little China?
Yeah. He was Bruce Lee's trainer's trainer.
So at the end, when basically Kurt Russell gets through all of them, and then you've got the one at the end that goes, it just expands.
Thunder. You're talking about Thunder.
Carter Wong.
Right.
He come over to do something. I trained in Basildon.
Get out. On that bombshell, let's wrap this episode up.
And I never got a black belt.
And in the next episode, we're going to talk about Chris's Willy. Mm-hmm. My press junket reputation. I'll start with my press junket reputation, and then we'll go into films.
I like that. Films that
you've enjoyed or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
And then we'll go into all sorts of other stuff. So, yeah.
Can we do Dartford in the second? Yeah, we'll do Dartford. I'm getting pissed, and I want to be on point when I say this.
I don't want you
do it at the start, then.
All right, well, we'll see you in a bit. We're going to have a wee break and get back on it. Ta ta.
You've been listening to Scroobius Picks Discretion Pieces.
There we go. That was part two. I'm not going to ramble too much. I'm going to send you on your way to part three. I'll give a shout out to Love Beer. I think we gave tons of drunk shout outs to them. And a bigger, even bigger shout out to Slingsbury Rhubarb Gin.
because that is now the new Scroobius 2019. Slingsbury Rhubarb Gin and Pepsi Max. Part two is going to be out on Boxing Day. So have a bloody lovely Christmas. And I'll see you then. Ta-ta!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.